just to reiterate what you said, you had to live on, because you were sued for this money, you had to live on minimum wage, right? And I think if I know the story correctly, your books began to sell like crazy. You've now sold 11 million books,
Yeah,
but
12,
instead of
12.
taking that money because of what happened, you began to give it away to the kingdom around the world. Isn't that
Right.
how it happened? So it caused you, in a sense, to just begin to fund the kingdom going around the world. Can you share a little bit of that?
Yeah, so a new book that's just come out, The Promise of the New Earth, is my 60th book, and all the royalties from those books, and over 12 million copies have sold now, that are given away to ministries. We used to give 100% away to ministries, and we really still do, but 10% of it goes to our ministry, help fund our ministry, because our ministry board said a while back, aren't we a worthy ministry? So how about we use 10% of it just for ours, and then give away the other 90% to all these other ministries, which is what we do. And it's been magnificent. I mean, something I don't recall what the figure is, that I think by now it's over $9 million at least that has gone to these other ministries. Yeah, what a joy. And that's an example of God bringing good out of bad. And so all things work together for good. Sometimes you see it and sometimes you don't. Sometimes it takes decades to see it.
What's so crazy about this is I can't fathom, having walked through, when I heard that story, I was just in shock. Like, I can't imagine. You're out there doing good and you got attacked in such a way, from my perspective. And yet you're here so many years later and you've been able to do a lot of good, but you feel that incredible, what looks to me like an incredible suffering, has brought an incredible glory to God and good to others. And I just am blown away by that. In my opinion, you've lived under some suffering that I don't think most of us can even fathom, but you've found it to be something that God has used in your life in an amazing way. And I'm guessing even through that season, and even now, you feel blessed. Like, at some point you were able to take a little more than minimum wage, right? And you've been able to do that, which is just like, how did that feel? I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, and first of all, I mean, God, while I was technically making minimum wage, our ministry found ways like providing a car for me to drive, and a car for Nancy to drive, and reimbursing the gas money spent on it because it belonged to the ministry rather than I. So, the minimum wage part of it was definitely manageable. It certainly wasn't not a normal income, yet it was something that we got by on fine. But yeah, we saw very quickly that God's hand was in this. We had many people at my church who became supporters of our ministry, who respected what we had done and were doing. And we just took the things closest to our hearts, world missions and pro-life ministry, and just determined from the beginning, okay, all the royalties from the books are going to go to these causes. And I've had people over the years say, do you realize with those millions and millions of dollars, do you realize that what you could have done with that? And my response is always, nothing that would bring us nearly as much joy as what we have done with it, which is give it away to God's kingdom. And so to me, and I had written a book called Money, Possessions, Eternity, another one of my big books, in which I had talked about, after 15 years, getting out of debt, paying off our house and all. And then 1 month after paying off our house, which I didn't know when I turned in my final manuscript of Money, Possessions, Eternity, 1 month later would begin the minimum wage. Well, the difference was incredible. I mean, just in the timing of God was just magnificent. And so, yeah, he used all that for good, and he used it for good in terms of character building. You know, that 2 Corinthians 4 passage, I mean, think about this. These light and momentary sufferings, and think of what Paul is calling light and momentary in his own life. Hmm. I mean, you know, later in the same book, he gives the list of 5 times the 40 lashes minus one, that basically the death penalty, lashed to death minus one lash, you know, was the idea. As close as to dying as you can get is the basic idea of that penalty. To experience that 5 times, to be shipwrecked a number of times at sea, to be cold, to be hungry, to be beaten, to be robbed, to be all of the things that he experienced, and then ultimately his head cut off by the order of Nero, the emperor, and he's calling it these light and momentary afflictions. So if you think, oh, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about because he's not seen how I've suffered. Trust me, if you suffered more than the Apostle Paul suffered in your life, I mean, wow. I really doubt anyone who will ever see this has suffered more than Paul. Maybe there's somebody somewhere. But my point is, for him to call it light and momentary. Now, what does he mean when he calls it light and momentary? Does he really mean, is he trying to negate the significance of suffering and trying to underplay it, say, oh, it really doesn't matter or it's really no big deal? No, I think what he's saying is it's light and momentary compared to. It may seem like it lasted a long time, your suffering, but we don't last a long time in this world under suffering. So it can't have, in the eyes of eternity, it can't have lasted a long time. And why does he call it light? Well, you know, it may be really, really heavy like his sufferings were. But if you take something that is very heavy, like let's say a boulder, and you could put it on a giant, you know, scales, a balance type of scales, you put that thing down there and you say, oh my gosh, that outweighs just about everything. Well, now take the rock of Gibraltar and put it on the other side of the scales, and that boulder is nothing. Now take the rock of Gibraltar and put it on one side of the scales, and let's take the planet Jupiter and put it on the other side. We're talking really big scales now. But, I mean, that's what he means, light and momentary. And this is where I think that even gets back to the whole connection between suffering and evil and eternity and what we'll enjoy as resurrected beings on a resurrected earth. Compared to eternity, I think we will all look back probably immediately, but certainly how long will it take to make up for all of the bad things that ever happened to us in this world? Now, the one caveat to that is that people don't automatically go to heaven. And so there are people who will spend tragically eternity in hell unnecessarily, but as just punishment for their sin and their rebellion against God. And this is sad, it's tragic, and you could go, but wait a minute, nothing's going to outweigh their suffering. All we know is that God is just. We know that the punishment that he inflicts on people in hell is not equal. There's passages that talk about some beaten with heavier blows and some with lighter blows, and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's an appropriate punishment to the number and significance and weight of sins committed, but there's no way to minimize how horrible hell will be. And that's why, of course, many people are denying hell now, and they're saying it's just annihilation. I wish that were the case. It just seems like all of these passages that depict, like the rich man and Lazarus, very obvious, conscious, ongoing suffering. But to be able to say, look, Jesus Christ took upon himself that suffering. And if you doubt the love of God for you and the love of God for the world, just imagine Jesus stretching out his hands to you when you're thinking God doesn't care, and just stretching out his hands, and you look at the scars on those hands, the feet, and can you hear him say, do these look like the hands and feet of a God who does not care? And that's why I say Jesus is the only answer bigger than the questions.